You're ready whenever you are.
Doesn't it look like I am ready? I am always ready. I have been ready since first call. I am ready. Roll.
The VGRG Gaming Podcast, episode 367, recorded on October 31st, 2014.
Hello, and welcome to the 367th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 200th episode of Video Game Roundtable, brought to you on this special Halloween day. I am Paul S. Novak.
I'm Devin Grime.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and often includes other segments.
Well, we do have another segment. We actually have a gaming history this time.
Ooh.
And it's actually something that you know very well, Paul.
I know many things very well, but which one are you referring to specifically?
Why not we don't say anything and keep it as a minor spoiler, even though it's going to be in the notes anyway?
Spoiler? Well, I don't scroll down, so spoilers.
Don't scroll down. You'll spoil the surprise then.
Spoilers, darling. Spoilers.
Anyways, this is the 200th episode of Video Game Roundtable.
Yay, 200.
And this is the first episode of Devin Grimes.
Joining us is Devin Grimes as our new contributor.
Yes, and Devin does have a history, although sort of with
the
Video Game Roundtable.
Well, most people have a history, Jonah.
Because he wrote for Game Stooge, and Video Game Roundtable was the podcast of Game Stooge, but Game Stooge closed down a couple of months ago, and now this is the remnant, having merged with another podcast, which is why we have two episodes. We have an edition, and we have an episode. So, Devin, what do you remember about Game Stooge?
Oh, man, that was certainly definitely a different era in games journalism. I mean, that was kind of the height of gaming blogs, and I think we really did some good work back then. I think a lot of it, you know, these days probably wouldn't quite hold up. It's just kind of a different industry as a whole now.
Well, you know, one writer has now gotten a nice prominent position in IGN. That's Mitchell Dyer, better known as Mitchie D. He actually wrote for Game Stooge for a while, and I think used it to springboard to bigger and better things. I, on the other hand, stayed with a sinking ship. So.
And I pretty much just disappeared from the gaming community for a little bit there, but.
It's called life, you know. You have to experience life.
Absolutely.
Now, Paul.
Yes.
The thing is that you've been with the Video Game Roundtable not from the very, very beginning, but you were
from
around,
like, episode 87, I think.
Yeah. So how did you? I completely forgot. Maybe you have a better perspective on this. How did you first get involved with Video Game Roundtable? Anyway.
You posted on Facebook, oh my God, I'm in such trouble. My podcaster canceled on me. Does anybody want to fill in?
Okay.
And I was like, I ain't doing anything.
Right, right. And we had gaming professional mutual acquaintances. So you're able to see that little message. Now, Devin, you don't know this, but Paul is actually a developer.
Oh, that's
no,
fantastic.
Jonah.
Okay, he wants to get on me, but he works on
Jesus
video games.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, I work on video games, but Jonah has absolutely no idea what it is that I do.
I use the blanket term, okay?
I am not a blanket individual. You don't use a blanket term when you're introducing somebody.
Okay, well, Paul, what do you do in the video game industry?
I am a video game designer.
Okay.
So he worked for Disney Interactive, made some Facebook games.
Very cool.
Worked for the U.S. Olympic team most recently.
Yeah. So, and you're back with some form of Disney, right?
No.
No? Oh, you're trying to get back. That's right. Or something.
We don't talk about those things.
Anyways, we're going to move on to what have you been playing. Paul, what have you been playing?
Well, I have not been playing a whole lot this week because I've been, you know, the reason we were off the air last week is because I was traveling back and forth from New York visiting my godbabies. So I have not had a great deal of opportunity to play anything within the last week or so. However, because Jonah talked about it so damn much, and because it came included with the sequel, I actually went to GameStop and paid retail for Bayonetta 2 on the Wii U, and I will be enjoying that probably next week.
I didn't know that the Bayonetta 2 came with the first Bayonetta port.
It does.
Wow. Just so you know, Paul, the reason why I talk it up is because, to me, you know, Bayonetta is what every drag queen aspires to be. She is – if you know drag queens, then you'll know, Bayonetta is one of them. She is – a full-on diva. And if you enjoy camp, you'll love Bayonetta.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoy strong female protagonists, Jonah. But I'd like to point out that of the two of us, you seem to be the one a little bit fixated with drag queens.
Because I grew up with them. So anyways,
and no one is blaming you for what happened before the arc.
But I'm going to tell you something about Bayonetta. She's the sort of person in which one of the bad guys starts talking, she shoots him and says, "Stop talking, let's fight." So she's that kind of character. So I think you'll really enjoy her.
Well, thank you. I look forward to it.
Devin, what have you been playing?
Oh, man. It's been a little bit scatterbrained on a few things here, but I guess mainly Shadow of Mordor. That's been one of those games where, you know, I just keep playing, and then before I know it, I should be sleeping, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's always the mark of a good game.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, the Nemesis system's great in that. I mean, that's kind of just gives you a bunch of short goals that, you know, end up in a long goal of, like, dominating a war chief or branding them.
You know, there's an achievement, and I never tried for this because I didn't know it existed, in which if you let one of the orcs kill you and he becomes a, you know, captain, if you allow him to rise all the way up to war chief and then kill him, or Brandon, he becomes, it's the rise and fall achievement, which I think is pretty neat, you know?
Yeah, it's a really cool concept. And like, to be honest, I first bought Shadow of Mordor when it first launched. I probably played it for a few hours, died one time, felt really bad about it because, you know, here's this guy, now he's my nemesis. He's rising through the ranks through killing me. You know, it really makes you think about, you know, getting
about
things
nemeses?
Right.
Well, here's the thing is that one guy was almost unbeatable because he only had one weakness, and that weakness was ranged attacks. And my guy wasn't specced for ranged attacks.
Pie can be a ranged attack.
Worse, he was the one orc who doesn't talk. All he does is giggle, chatter, and just make creepy faces at you.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there's one orc who does that. And that's the one thing that I love about this game is that every single orc has a different personality, and every time you think you've seen them all, a new one pops up, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I completed the game. There is DLC coming out for it, which I'm sort of intrigued by. People said it was too short, but here's the thing is that I didn't spend much time following the main path. I just did my thing, right? And just because the world is so explorable that, you know, it's sort of, oh, I have to go back to the main story. Okay, I guess I will move the story forward. You know, it's sort of, you sometimes you just want to do things in it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of weird. The other big game I'm playing is Evil Within right now. And I made that, I'm about three chapters into that. It's okay, but it's an intense experience. You know, it's kind of, you want to play it in shorter play sessions, and contrasting that with Shadow of Mordor.
Well, I mean, you know, that's when Bethesda hired the guy who did Resident Evil, I think. I don't think it was Silent Hill. I think it was Resident Evil.
Yeah, Resident Evil 4 would be Shinji Mikami.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bethesda's is trying something new. I haven't gotten it yet. I just got Sunset Overdrive, and I guess this is where I talk about what I've been playing. I got it last night. I didn't get it at launch, but I still got the launch achievement. And, you know, it's basically Tony Hawk meets Crackdown. It's basically what it is, which is a lot more cartoony. And, you know, it's amazing. It's the first time I've ever made a character who looks exactly like me. You know, and I didn't have all the things unlocked either. You know, I mean, there'll be additional things you can unlock, but just the basic look of me, you know, without even do that idiotic face scanning thing. Paul, shut up. Before I know what you're going to say, shut up.
I didn't say anything.
You didn't have to. I could hear it.
That's really interesting, though, because, you know, a lot of those kind of wackier open world games, I try and just make the dumbest character possible.
Yeah, and I usually don't like open world games, but Middle Earth and Sunset Overdrive are both open world games, and I'm enjoying them.
Yeah. I've got to say, creating the character has never been one of my greater pastimes in games.
Really? Who was the huge City of Heroes fan again?
Who had one character.
Yeah, but you still created him. I mean,
I had one character.
Well, I only create one character.
I only ever made the one.
Well, I mean, okay, how about The Sims? I mean, you probably only have one person who's supposed to be yourself in The Sims, though, right?
Well, I have, like, three of the people that I'm supposed to be living with.
Oh, okay. But, you know, I mean, but the thing is that it's, if I make a character in a game, I usually like to play myself, play, you know, my fantasy character or something else or something like that.
Yeah, my life is interesting enough. I want to play with, I want to get into the head of the protagonist.
You're knocking the podcast notes down. They're scrolling
who's
down.
Doing
you're
that?
Pressing a return or something.
Who?
You.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are because...
I'm not even near my keyboard.
Well, how come Paul Nowak is pushing it down and it says your name right there?
Because you are evil.
Okay.
That's why.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the game news. Who should take this one? I guess I'll take it first. Ebola scare drives sharp rise in Plague Inc. downloads, and this comes to us from Polygon. 24-hour news channels devote their coverage to the Ebola outbreak, a game about... Okay. As, you know, I didn't write this copy. Don't blame me.
I blame you for everything.
As 24-hour news channels devote their coverage to the Ebola outbreak, a game about infectious diseases has seen a dramatic spike in downloads. Downloads of Plague Inc., a free game that simulates the period of deadly worldwide virus, has risen 50% in the last 2 weeks, according to developer James Vaughn. Vaughn, who runs a one-man studio, Endemic Creations, said that the game has spiked in the past, usually as a result of updates, but its recent climb in mobile play charts has been all down to the interest of Ebola, which has so far killed an estimated 5,500 people. Plague Inc. puts the player in the role of a pathogen. The goal of the game is to spread as far as possible. London-based Vaughn said he wants to use his interest in the game to help charities that are working to fight the spread of Ebola. Plague Inc. has an audience of 35 million people who have downloaded since the game was launched, he said. I want to help it any way I can, whether that is raising funds or raising awareness. I am currently talking to major charities to see if Plague Inc. can be used as a tool some way. I'm going to get to that for a moment. Players can give the plague any name they choose, so it's no surprise that screenshots are emerging with the word Ebola taking prominence. Vaughn said that the diseases in the game differ from Ebola in that the quote-unquote, the algorithms are designed to assume air transmission is possible, and that they also don't assume that it takes a number of days or weeks before people are able to spread the disease. A version of Ebola that can be transmitted in the air has not emerged, despite significant fears that a mutation is possible. By the way, it is a free game, but there's also a game that was released on Steam for $5, which is an advanced version of the game.
And yes, it's lovely when you have a one-person shop, because that's one of the things that they could do is respond in a charitable, thoughtful way to any market changes that happen, like suddenly finding popularity.
You know, the funny thing is that most of the time when people are playing this game, I've learned that they give the disease names like Justin Bieber, just so they can say Justin Bieber has invaded the United States and is making people sick. You know, and the thing is, people don't usually use real life disease names in the game because it's too scary, you know? But apparently it's fascinating people to the point in which they are doing that.
It's kind of a buzzword right now. A lot of people are talking about it. I mean, if you even look at Reddit, a lot of Reddit usernames are like, you know, Ebola, something else. It's just kind of everyone's talking about it. And I think Plague Inc. does a good job of kind of not really educating people, but giving them a good idea how this kind of stuff spreads.
Yeah, but like you said, there's no air transmission, you know, for Ebola. Although there are such mutations. I mean, if that happens, then you'll have a real problem. it's just interesting to see, you know, what a game sort of like is out at the right time, you know. And
yeah, a lot of market things are luck and timing, and just forces beyond your control. I mean, for example, you know, the Candy Crush mechanic has been around forever, but it just took a bit of timing and opportunity, and, you know, they had a multi-billion-dollar success on their hands.
By the way, whatever happened to King? I mean, we don't hear anything about King. They were supposed to be coming out with new games. I guess that's a yeah, exactly.
Well, the fun part about King is that they made something like 30 games before Candy Crush. So they've been doing this for a long time, and we haven't been hearing that much about them in all of that time other than Candy Crush.
Yeah.
So my personal expectations are not that high.
But you know what? They got their game and they made their money. I mean, they don't have to, they're not expected to have a number one hit again, basically.
Oh yeah. I mean, at that point, like just cash in your chips and get out of the game business. I mean, make room for someone else to get lucky.
But they actually invested in another, made a massive purchase. So they're not cashing in their chips. So we'll see what happens with them.
Well, that's their fault.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Twitch bans sexually suggestive clothing in new terms. And this comes to us from CVG. Twitch has asked that its users, quote, dress appropriately in its updated terms of use. The popular game streaming service has added a new guidance on dress code that users should not be seen on Steam full or partially nude or wearing, quote, sexually suggested clothing. Quote, nerds are sexy, and you're all magnificent, beautiful creatures. But let's try to keep this about the games, shall we? Reads the updated rules and conduct page. Wearing no clothing or sexually suggestive clothing, including lingerie, swimsuits, pasties, and undergarments, is prohibited, as well as any full nude torsos, which applies to both male and female broadcasters. You may have a great six-pack, but it's better shared on the beach during a two-on-two volleyball game, rather than playing with the boys on this site.
Blasting playing with the boys. It's a song, Paul.
Whatever. if it's unbearably hot where you are and you happen to have your shirt off, guys, or a bikini top, girls, then just crop the webcam to your face. Problem solved. This is the latest in a line of new terms and conditions for Twitch users. Twitch recently stipulated a new requirement for all of its broadcasters to disclose when they're participating in a promotional campaign with the company. Broadcasters who are part of a, quote, influencer campaign arranged between themselves, Twitch, and the publisher will have the content that is part of the deal clearly denoted as such to the streaming site's front page and in any external promotions. Twitch was acquired by Amazon in August as part of a more than $1 billion deal. The online retailer made an agreement with Twitch's shareholders to purchase all remaining shares, quote, for approximately $970 million in cash as adjusted for the assumption of options and other items.
This disturbs me a little bit because when you say can't wear sexually suggestive clothing, that is very subjective.
Well, that leaves most of West Hollywood out.
I mean, suppose you're a woman who has naturally humongous breasts, and no matter what you wear, a sweater, whatever, it's going to be sexually suggestive.
I think when you, as it comes to, you know, the point of view of a company, a tight sweater for any endowed woman is not sexually suggestive in and of itself. It would be sexually suggestive if it was, you know, low cut and there were peekaboos around the ribs.
Well, what if she's really cute and she's sexually suggestive just being there? Or, you know, for guys who are allowed to walk around without a shirt on in public, that's not...
Yeah, that's part of the thing that bugs me a little bit, is that, you know, there are laws about decency, which we as a society have, and they include allowing both men and women to walk around shirtless.
Devin?
In public. That's the law. that's not just something that I made up. That is the law of the land. And this is more stringent than the law. Like, I'm just a little annoyed by that, but whatever. But you know what? Hey, they're about creating a family-friendly community there, and God bless them for trying.
Yeah, no, I think we should just kind of keep it classy in the gaming community. You know, there's plenty of websites where people can go to get what they need out of people that are streaming with their shirt off or anything.
But you know,
that.
But I've kind of noticed this as a trend just with, you know, technology in general. It just seems that no matter what, like, you're absolutely right, Devin, there's apps for any kind of sex or kink or proclivity or whatever you've got going on, that not everything needs to be a meat hunting ground. But unfortunately, it seems like with just about everything, that's what it eventually gets turned into. There's this one great app called Secret on iOS, and it's supposed to be where you could just like post things anonymously with little pictures that, you know, make you think or whatever. And yet there's at least 10 to 15% of it that is all about, hey, 18F up, want to chat, question mark. Like, that's their whole secret. It's like, really? Really? Like, isn't get that, Tinder, goddammit.
Isn't that the app that was also a conduit for bullying? I'm trying to remember if that was the one.
I don't understand how it could be.
No, in which there was an app in which you could tell the secret about someone, and it got really dark really fast. I guess I'm thinking of the wrong app.
You must be thinking about something else, because that sounds like it's specifically about other individuals, whereas in this it's entirely anonymous. Like, I couldn't even tell if a post was listed by a friend of mine or not.
Oh, okay. I'm bothered by the wording of the sexually suggestive, because that can mean anything, right? You know.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jonah. I mean, I don't know if you saw the kind of viral video that's been working its way around about the woman walking around in New York City just getting catcalled for 10 hours. But, I mean, she wasn't wearing anything sexually suggestive. I mean, she was a beautiful woman. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take, you know, just a bikini top or anything. You could just be a tight sweater or a tight pair of jeans or anything like that, you know.
And you know, not for nothing, I think that we, in our own biases as men, are part of the problem unless we're consciously aware of trying to be the opposite. I mean, Jonah, for example, used the for instance of a well-endowed woman, you know, on this on the Twitch service. What about a really hot guy with like 50-inch pecs?
Here's the thing.
What if he's wearing a wife beater? That's definitely going to be sexually suggestive to someone.
Well, here's the thing. What if he wears a button-up dress shirt, and he has it buttoned down like four buttons, right? Is Twitch going to tell him, hey, look, button that up? You know?
I don't know. I think that from a company standpoint, they're just trying to cover their bases.
Well, here's the thing. I think it's very important to note that it was bought by Amazon.com. And you know what happens with large corporations, especially when they buy a smaller company, they start to impose restrictions because they're a larger company and they have...
Well, rightfully so.
You know, I'm wondering how much of this is Twitch and how much of it really is Amazon.
I would imagine that it's mostly Amazon. As a larger company, they have more to protect than Twitch would have back in the past. And so they have a proper procedure and way of doing things.
Well, here's the thing. They don't.
And I think it's completely right.
They don't. The thing is that they did not have before this a web streaming program. I mean, this is the first time they've had to deal with this sort of technology. Basically, Amazon is just, you know, the only thing they ever really had to do with videos was selling, you know, TV shows and movies. They never had
no, see, but I, but I think you're, I think you're overlooking that they, you know, have to keep some kind of content standards for any of their self-published books, and you know, if they want to do anything that, you know, borders on an erotic line, that they, you know, they have standard, like, they're a large company, they have standards. Clearly, if it, you know, they're not going to let somebody self-publish, you know, tons of rape fantasies. Like, that's just something as a company they would not allow. So they're probably just extending those policies,
yeah,
but, you know, written by the same people at the company, right. I think, based on what they feel that their shareholders are comfortable with.
I think we should toss this to the listeners and see what they think. You know,
what qualifies as sexually suggestive in your mind? Send us photos.
Yeah, we're not going there, Paul.
Oh, come on. Live a little. It's America.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next
item. Freedom of dress.
We're going to move on to the next item. Devin, go ahead.
Okay, next item, Dying Light canceled for PS3 and 360. This comes to us from gamesindustry.biz. Got Polish developer Techland has canceled the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 versions of its upcoming zombie game Dying Light, citing the technical demands of the title. After thorough internal testing, we have come to the conclusion that we have no choice but to leave past-gen systems behind and release Dying Light exclusively on the next-gen consoles on PC. Put simply, older consoles just couldn't run the game and stay true to the core vision of Dying Light at the same time, the company said in a Facebook post. The game was originally due for release this year, but Techland pushed the date back to February 2015 in May and said it needed extra time to ensure the game was ready. Quote, the new date ensures that we can fully realize our vision of an innovative open-world game We won't need to make compromises or trade-offs or on any of the five platforms we're working on. For you, it means an outstanding original game that makes the wait more than worthwhile.
You know, I think this might be the first in a long line because, you know, there are a lot of games that are coming out which have been also on Xbox One and 360 and on PS4 and PS3, like Titanfall. You know, did anybody was anybody really excited about the 360 version of Titanfall? You know, or the 360 version of Middle-earth? Or, you know, so I think this is the first in which the I guess we can call them last-gen consoles now, that they're finally starting to get, buried a little bit.
I don't know that I would go so far as to say that they're getting buried. I think that it's particularly important for this this incredibly invested group of players who are more into your Halos and your Call of Duties, that are willing to spend the extra money, who have probably already upgraded to next-gen consoles, to consider whether or not backwards compatibility is going to continue to be supported and whether or not that's important to them so that they can factor that into making their choices moving forward. Because if it's happening this time for this generation, you know, it's going to happen for the next generation too. So just, you know, be aware of which company has the policies that you support.
Go ahead, Devin.
I mean, I think it's got to happen sometime. I think this is this cross-generation leap has definitely been pushing a lot harder than, you know, between the Xbox and the Xbox 360 generation. That was pretty much a straight cutoff. We had a few ports here and there, but it's about time. I mean, I think people have moved on.
Yeah, the thing is that I also think devoting time to those extra consoles, because I have a sneaking suspicion, had there not been a 360, PS3, and sorry, Paul, Wii version I had it on the tip of my tongue and now I forgot it. Ubisoft's game, Watch Dogs. If they had just focused on PS4, Xbox One, and PC, maybe we might have had a fuller game. Because Paul, you know this. The more platforms you have to develop for, the more, you know, the more manpower is diverted.
Oh, right, and the more budget is going to eat up, clearly.
I mean, there are certain games that are going to have sports games and, say, Call of Duty. They're always going to have it on the older platforms because, A, they can. B, they spend a lot of money. And, you know, there's still, you know, people who are playing that kind of game on the last gen. But the problem is, if you're starting a new IP, especially, it's best just to start off, you know, with the newest and hottest, because by the time your game is released, they're not going to be the newest and hottest anymore. You're probably going to have a larger user install base, which I think, Paul, you also have, you know, you feel that, you know, I always know that you think that, you know, it's better to have a lot of people using your console, you know.
Oh, absolutely. It's better to have a wider base on your platform. And I agree also that if you're going to be launching a new IP, it has to look like the most new thing on the market. And so you should be making it for the newest consoles. And then everything else is a secondary priority.
Go ahead, Devin.
Yeah. I don't know how much I was looking forward to Dying Light personally, but I mean, I think it's a game with kind of limited appeal. We got Techland, who has a kind of spotty track record in the past. You know, it's hit or miss. There's good Techland and there's bad Techland.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, Techland does something strange in which they're going to have the one game that they're focusing on, and then they're going to send it to another studio. That's what happened. They swapped out between Dead Island and, oh, shoot. What was the name of that Western game that they released?
That Call of Juarez?
Yeah, Call of Juarez, the one which dealt with all the Western legends, the most Techland worked on that, while the other company, you know, the remainder, worked on Dead Island 2. So, for those of you who don't know, Dying Light is basically Dead Island with parkour. You know, so it's a lot faster paced and sort of like Dead Island meets Mirror's Edge sort of thing, with a day-night cycle in it. Have you seen it, Devin?
Yeah, I've watched a little bit of footage. The day-night cycle does seem pretty cool. You know, I wasn't a big Dead Island fan. It it was a fun game. The analog combat system was kind of interesting, but it just has a little bit of jank to it that, you know, I couldn't quite get behind. I'm really curious to see how Dying Light turns out. It's been pushed back a good bit now. But, yeah, we'll see. I'm definitely open to trying it.
Yeah. Paul, this is not your sort of game, is it?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, so anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Xbox One available for $350 starting on November 2nd, and this comes to us from Xbox.com. Microsoft has announced the quote-unquote Season of Xbox, which will begin on November 2nd, which happens to be Sunday. This Sunday, when Xbox One will be available for the special limited-time promotional offer of $349 in the U.S., special promotional pricing of $50 off on the console. Special promotional pricing of $50 off the console of a player's choice applies to any Xbox One console, including the special edition bundles. Some of the bundles include the Xbox One Assassin's Creed bundle for $350 and with Kinect for $449, which includes the Assassin's Creed Unity, which is the one that's coming out, as well as Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. The Xbox One Assassin's Creed bundle with Kinect also includes Dance Central Spotlight. Other bundles include an Xbox One Special Edition Sunset Overdrive bundle and an Xbox One Limited Edition Call of Duty Advanced Warfare bundle for $449, including a 1 terabyte hard drive, custom console, custom controller, and limited edition exoskeleton, plus a digital copy of Call of Duty Advanced Warfare Day Zero Edition. The promotion's being done at most major retailers, including Amazon, Best Buy, GameStop, Target, Toys R Us, Walmart, and Microsoft itself. Devin, so this is the article that you wanted to talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is a great push from Microsoft. I mean, I think they're really doing a lot to turn themselves around from some of the issues they had at launch. Their message seems to be pretty clear that they're trying to get units out there and in the gamers' hands. I think Sunset Overdrive, like you're playing, is a one of the first big games for the system that might actually get some systems sold.
Titanfall sold a few systems, I think.
yeah, absolutely. But yeah, $349, that's a hell of a deal. The Wii U, that is still at $299 currently for, well, $50 more.
You know, it comes out in 2 weeks after that, right? The Halo Collector's Edition.
Oh, absolutely.
Which includes 1 through 4. I don't think, Paul, have you seen the new Gravemind video?
No, I haven't.
Have you seen it, Devin?
No.
Your jaw will drop at the new cutscenes in Halo 2 Anniversary Edition. Gravemind no longer looks like Audrey 2. He actually looks like a monster. you have to see it. Just put in Halo 2 Gravemind, 60 frames per second, and they also, you know, like Halo 1 Anniversary, you can flip between the two. And the reason they're doing this, of course, is next year Halo 5 is coming out, and they want people who aren't quite familiar with Halo, I don't know who that might be, but, you know, to have all of the games, and a lot of people are excited about the multiplayer coming back, Halo 2's multiplayer coming back. I did an early adoption. I got a day one Xbox One, and Jordan told me that, well, you still have the USB 3 if you want to hook it up, but still a 1 terabyte hard drive. Now, I hope that that's something that they keep moving forward, because that'll allow people to have a lot more digital purchases.
Yeah, 1 terabyte. I mean, that eventually will probably not even be enough if you want to keep all your games on your system. I've got a 500 gigabyte PlayStation 4, and I've come all but close to filling it up at this point. I've just been deleting games, you know, as I know I'm not going to play them for a while.
Or you can invest in an external hard drive. I mean, but I don't want to do that myself either.
Yeah, I there's something to be said about just the console itself. You don't want a big box sitting next to it on the entertainment center, you know.
So, Paul, what is your opinion about the price drop?
Price drops are always a good thing. I mean, you know, personally, I am very much of the opinion that many things are overpriced, and that perhaps our expectations are dropping compared to what we're paying for games. Where it used to be, you know, $50 bought you Mario 3 and you could, you know, play that forever, just because it's super duper fun. you know, $70 will get you a $10 first-person shooter game. It's like, it's a little unrealistic to me. So I'm always happy when I hear about
it. Well, remember, Paul, that a lot of games back then were a lot more expensive than games are now. One, inflation. And I remember $80 games, you know, for the NES and the Super NES. Remember them? Just exorbitant priced games. Now, I know that, you know, a $50 game in 1990 is sort of like a $80 game now. I mean, I know you got endless
Well, that's kind of what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah. I mean,
but since Devin's new, he has not heard of the patented Novak valuation formula. Okay, here's my thing. If I'm going to spend any money on a form of entertainment, specifically on video games, I expect to get at least $1 per dollar that I spend on that entertainment. This is why I never go to the movie theater, because I'm not going to spend $25 for 2 hours of entertainment. If I spend $50 on a game, I better be able to play it for 50 hours without getting bored. Otherwise, not a good value. I'm going to end up buying it used.
Well, that's just the, you know, movies and games now. You know, we have a very healthy used game market and Netflix market, you know, and a lot of people don't care about having to see it on the big screen or get it day one. They're patient. They say, oh, I'll just wait until it's part of a bundle, you know. I mean, I had Dead Island because of a $8 Humble Bundle, you know, along with a bunch of other games. So, Devin, any other thoughts on this?
No, I think we about covered it. I just think it shows Microsoft being pretty aggressive here. It's a good thing for gamers. It's a good thing for the community. I think if we can get more consoles into people's homes, it's good for everybody.
Okay, moving on to the next time. Go ahead, Paul. Sony apologies.
Sony apologizes for Drive Club's ongoing launch wars.
Woes.
And this comes to us.
Not wars. Woes.
I said woes.
You said wars.
I was trying to not say whores, actually, but if I screwed it up, I apologize.
You know what? I don't
I was
ever have
trying to keep it clean. Hey, it's a family program.
Paul, you don't ever have to apologize for launch whores.
Launch whores!
I want a game called Launch Horse.
I would like to point out that my design for this game would include equal amounts of male and female whore. Equality and justification for all.
Why is Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space starting to spring into mind?
I have no idea, but moving on. Sony apologizes for Drive Club's ongoing launch woes, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. It's been 3 weeks since launch, but Sony's PlayStation 4 exclusive Drive Club is still beset by online problems. In a post on the game's official Facebook page today, Sony Computer Entertainment Worldwide Studios President Shuli Yoshida offered another update, another apology to players, and another delay for the PlayStation Plus edition of the game. Quote, "We have been listening to your feedback and realize that patience understandably is running out," Yoshida said. "Evolution Studios is working around the clock to close the gap, and we have deployed additional engineering resources to help resolve the remaining issues as soon as possible. Unfortunately, the timeframes require a rollout. The fully connected experience will be longer than anticipated, and we will not have an exact timeframe for when they will be resolved." Yoshida went on to say that the release of the PlayStation Plus edition, a version with limited tracks and cars offered free to Plus subscribers, would be postponed until further notice. Quote, "Our first priority is to provide you with the best possible experience while playing Drive Club," Yoshida said. "While with the high volume of new players and additional server load the PS Plus edition is anticipated to bring, we are currently not confident we can guarantee the best online experience."
Okay, Paul, open fire, because I know how you feel about launch day updates and releasing games that are buggy.
You know what? I'd rather wait for a game to come out. Like, I would rather wait for a whole game to be delayed than to have to, like, download a patch on launch day. I mean, I rarely, if ever, buy a game on launch day. If I have to, like, get it patched, it'll be, you know, I'll be buying the game several months later anyway. But goddamn it, I would be so infuriated if I went specially out on launch day to go get the latest Zelda or whatever, and then I had to go purchase it because it's going to automatically instill in me the thought that there are other things wrong with this game that they just have not fixed yet. And now my $80+ purchase is flawed. And now I'm going to resent the company for that, which, by the way, is the reason why I only ever really buy Zelda games on launch day.
Devin.
I mean, because they never needed to be fixed after the fact.
Yeah, I think this is absolutely unacceptable. I mean, you have people that paid money for the game, couldn't play it day one, couldn't play it week one for some people. And it's really disappointing. You know, I think it's really going to impact if there's ever a sequel or if there, you know, any continued support with Drive Club. I mean, this is a game that was supposed to be out on launch with the PlayStation 4 a year ago. And they did, and you know, they didn't delay it until about a month before the PlayStation 4 launched. Like, what were they doing? You know,
I just, how come every time there's something, I mean, there's a problem with the PlayStation 3, the PlayStation 4, it's always about the online. I mean, this has been Sony's bugaboo since the PlayStation 2. When?
Yeah.
PlayStation, it's now 2014. You've had 14 years to work on online experiences. What is the holdup? I mean, the PlayStation 4 is the first one that actually emulates, you know, what most people, you know, PCs and Xboxes do when it comes to live, in which you can chat and all that stuff. But I don't know. I mean, you'll occasionally have this, you know, because a massive amount of people are playing the hottest new Microsoft launch, right? But you know, after a week, it's like there are no online problems. But in this case, I don't know what Sony's doing, and when it comes to online, it just
they're
well, nobody knows what Sony's doing when it comes to online.
Yeah, they're having trouble. You know, a week after Destiny launched, for about a couple of days there, the whole friend adding system was bugged. Sending messages to people just didn't work. And we really got no explanation from that. It's something that now that we're paying for an online service, they really got to, you know, give it back to the gamers what they're putting in.
I think Sony more views PlayStation Plus more as a subscription service, in which you're subscribing to them for free games and digital and discounted games. It's sort of like the online gameplay is sort of like, oh yeah, you can do that too, you know.
Yeah.
The thing about Drive Club is that one of the problems right now with the next gen is that there aren't many original games, you know. I mean, the best games that you can play on a next gen system are games that you already owned on the last gen, like Assassin's Creed, you know. I mean, Sunset Drive may do that, we'll see. Titanfall was sort of like that, we'll see. You know, but with Sony, you know, they had to re-release Last of Us for the PlayStation 4. You know, and they had to share Destiny with the Xbox One. So Drive Club was their big exclusive game, and Sony's always been able to ride on racing games, you know, Gran Turismo and that sort of thing. Or, you know, and it hurt them when they couldn't release this game at launch. And, you know, I know Paul, one of Paul's favorite quotes from Shigeru Miyamoto is, you know, bad game, you know, is bad forever. That's Paul, you know the full quote.
Oh, a late game is game. A late game is late only once. A bad game is bad forever.
Right. So you know, Sony just a. I don't know. It's a tough decision when you're a company and really, you know, you don't have any big exclusive titles, you know, in shining letters that maybe they felt, you know, pressured to release this. You know, we can't wait any longer. It has to come out now. You know.
Oh yeah, I mean, because Christmas will wait for no man.
Yeah, or Black Friday, really. I mean, you know, I mean that's the hard date for a lot of people is Black Friday. You know, you gotta get it ready then.
And almost worse is almost, but not quite. Almost worse is end of June, because you have kids, you know, getting out of school for the summer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, so like those that like. Your number one and two windows to release the game. And it's like, and if you miss June, it's like, let's hoping you could fix it before you got to get it out the door in October. Hmm. You know, because you're right. If it's not in the stores by Halloween, you're boned. Thou must be in stores before All Hallows Eve. I'm going to get that on a t-shirt.
I think I got the opening bumper for today's episode.
I'm sorry. I have been watching Hocus Pocus at least 3 times. I am so in the Halloween spirit.
Well, you're
I'm sitting
hate
here in my costume.
Because I saw Hocus Pocus on when it first came out, the day, you know, premiere day.
I put a spell on you.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan. I didn't like the movie, even though I love Bette Midler. I just didn't like it. I guess I was...
Okay, it's cheesy and it's camp. I get it. It was the 90s.
Maybe that's the problem. I don't like the 90s much.
Nobody liked the 90s. Like, but this is a brilliantly put together film, and I highly recommend it. Especially if you put it through that nostalgic kid filter.
I'm pretty sure Paul also loved The Littlest Witch.
I did not. I've never seen it.
Really? It was an HBO thing. Anyways. So we don't have any listener feedback this week. We almost always have listener feedback. But the fact of the matter is that last week I said that we weren't going to be around for 2 weeks. And I think when you say that, it sort of makes people reticent to write letters because you're not going to read them for the next 2 weeks. You know, they want to hear their feedback right away. You know, they don't want it, and whatever they said might seem old to them by the time you read it. So, yeah, there's no.
Yeah, because, you know, I can see that point of view. And who wants to sit and try to remember what we were talking about 3 weeks ago anyway?
Well, they would have they possibly could just write their thoughts immediately after the episode, you know, but...
Yeah, but I mean, but who would want to hear about it now? I mean, so much has changed in those stories, or they're just no longer relevant to discuss anymore.
So anyways, we're going to move on to gaming history, and the gaming history is now... Devin, you don't know this rule, but gaming flashbacks and gaming histories, they must be at least 10 years old. So...
Okay.
So, you know, we don't have new games in it, because it's not much of a history if it's, like, last year. So, we came to a major gaming history that happened in 2004, and that is the Nintendo DS. The Nintendo DS is a dual-screen handheld game console developed and released by Nintendo. The device went on sale in North America on November 21st, 2004. The DS, short for either developer system or dual screen, introduced distinctive new features to handheld gaming. Two LCD screens working in tandem, the bottom one featuring a touchscreen, a built-in... microphone, and support for wireless connectivity. Both screens were encompassed within a clamshell design similar to the Game Boy Advance SP. The Nintendo DS also features the ability for multiple DS consoles to directly interact with each other over Wi-Fi within a short range without the need to connect to an existing wireless network. Alternatively, they can interact online using the Nintendo Wi-Fi connection service. On November 13, 2003, Nintendo announced they would be releasing a new game product in 2004. The company didn't release many details at the time, but stated it would not succeed the Game Boy Advance or the GameCube. On January 20, 2004, the console was announced under the codename Nintendo DS. Nintendo released only a few details at the time, saying that the console would have two separate 3-inch TFT LCD display panels, separate processors, and up to 1 gigabit, 128 megabytes, of semiconductor memory. On September 20th, 2004, Nintendo announced that the Nintendo DS would be released in November and in North America on the date we mentioned for $150. Wow. You know, even for 2004, that was a really low price.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. And I remember being annoyed about that price too, because I remember when the original NES came out for $100.
The console was released in North America with a midnight launch at Universal Skywalk EB Games in Los Angeles. I know that. I used to hang out there.
I live there. That's like I'm looking at it out my window right now. That's creepy.
But there's no longer any EB Games. I don't even think there's a GameStop there anymore.
Well, you know what? It's a tourist destination, so really, you're going to buy your games at home.
Yeah. The console was launched quietly in Japan compared to the North American launch, a source cites cold weather as the reason. The lower display of the Nintendo DS is overlaid with a touchscreen designed to accept input from the included stylus, the user's fingers, or a curved plastic tab attached to the optional wrist strap. The touchscreen lets users interact with the in-game elements more directly than pressing buttons. For example, in including chatting software, PictoChat, the stylus is used to write little messages or to draw. The handheld features four lettered buttons, the X, Y, A, B, a directional pad, and a start, select, and power buttons. On the top of the device are two shoulder buttons, a game card slot, a stylus holder, and a cable power input. The bottom features the Game Boy Advance game card slot. The original Game Boy, the original DS had backwards compatibility. The overall button layout resembles that of the Super NES controller. When using backward compatibility mode on the DS, the buttons X, Y, and the touchscreen are not used, as the Game Boy Advance line of systems do not feature these controls. It also has stereo speakers providing virtual surround sound, depending on the software, located on either side of the upper display screen. This was a first for a Nintendo handheld, as the Game Boy line of systems had only supported stereo sound through the use of headphones or external speakers. A built-in microphone was located below the left side of the bottom screen. Oh, geez. Do you remember...
Yes, but we'll get into all those stories in just a second. Finish reading the copy. I'm like, I'm holding back the dam. I don't know how much longer I can hold out.
It's been used for a variety of purposes, including speech recognition, chatting online between and during gameplay sessions, and minigames that require the player to blow or shout into the microphone. The DS had several iterations, including the Nintendo DS Lite, the Nintendo DSi, which was online focused and removed backwards compatibility with the Game Boy Advance, and the DSi XL, which had a larger screen and improved battery life. As of September 30th, 2014, all Nintendo DS models combined have sold 150 million units, making it the best-selling handheld console to date and the second-best video game console of all time.
Okay. I mean, that's astounding to me. And I would like to lead off our response with that.
The sales figures?
Yeah, the sales figures. Just the number of units moved alone.
I used to play Brain Age a lot, and also Brain Academy, but Brain Age when I played it. And the problem with this voice recognition that it was for Japanese speakers, unfortunately, they do not have the letter L in their language. So when blue popped up, you had to say brew. You couldn't say blue because it wouldn't recognize it. You had to say brew, which was...
Well, your borderline racism aside.
It's not racism. Paul, that is language. They do not have the letter L in the Japanese language.
Like, people remember what kind of a phenomenon the original Wii caused when you couldn't get it and everybody wanted one. And it was just the most revolutionary thing, even though it didn't have the best graphics, even though it didn't have the most amount of memory. And it was a massive thing, right? And how it sold out, it outsold its competition. The DS, over the run of its life, outsold the entire generation of hardware.
Now, here's the thing.
It was ridiculous.
I bought a launch Game Boy Advance, so I did not buy a launch DS because at the time I was cash strapped, and I was still enjoying the DS for what it was. I mean, the Game Boy Advance for what it was. When I finally got the DS, it was really, I liked the Game Boy Advance. I thought it was nice. I really, really enjoyed the DS. It was that much of a leap between the two. And those are the only, by the way, those are the two video game consoles I ever owned. I never owned a Game Boy Color. I never owned a Game Boy. I never owned a Vita. I never owned a Jaguar. Not a Jaguar. Oh, shit, the Lynx. I never owned. The only two handheld consoles I ever owned was a GBA and the DS. I still haven't bought into 3DS yet.
I have the 3DS extra large, I think, because I'm old and I need...
Yes, I know. And you make heavy use of the Street Pass. Whenever you can, that is.
You know what? Street Pass is great for when you're going... I mean, we're getting off topic. But Street Pass is great if you're going to be somewhere where there is thousands of people, like E3 yes. or Disneyland or...
Every 10 minutes, Paul was stopping to check and there was like 20 people waiting for him. The funniest thing ever...
Because it only holds like 20 people at a time. And it's like there are thousands of other people going by.
The funniest thing, though, was when you did it and there were... Three or four Miis who were dressed exactly the same as sort of a group, and they were all part of a group.
And then we saw the real-life people walking by. That was hysterical.
Yeah. How about you, Devin? The Game Boy DS? I'm the Game Boy DS. The Nintendo DS.
Yeah, I thought it was a great system. I bought it initially when the DS Lite came out. I think that's when probably most people did. It was such like an attractive piece of hardware compared to the original model, which was kind of clunky and, kind of kiddie looking.
By the way, we should stop talking in the past tense because the DS is still an active console.
Are they still selling it 10
yes.
years later?
Yes, they are.
Oh, yeah, right. The 2D. They've called it the 2DS now.
No. That's a different. No, I'm talking about the.
No. You're right. That's something completely different. Never mind. My bad.
It's found a new. Well, for one thing, the components are so inexpensive to make. They're selling them now in South America and all that stuff. So it's getting in more regions, and people still buy. Because one thing, and you can say this about almost every single Nintendo handheld, It is tough as crap to hurt. You can drop it. You can drop kick it. You can throw it against the wall. It takes a lot for you to harm a Nintendo handheld. You can't hurt it. So people buy it for their younger kids, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, because they know, you know, one, they're not going to hurt it, and two, if they do, it's so inexpensive that you can get another one.
My favorite was the original Game Boy that ended up in Desert Storm in like 92, and the poor bunker was bombed, but
the Game Boy Color,
the Game Boy still works. It's on display at the Nintendo Museum in New York. To this day, still there, still working. Nintendo means quality. Just saying.
The question of the week is, when did you first start listening to this podcast? Now, there are three answers that you can give. One is the TD Gaming Podcast, which is the original podcast. That's at episode 367. The Video Game Roundtable, which is Game Stooges podcast, which is now at 200. And Paul's more excited about 200 than I am.
Woohoo! Nice round number! Easily divisible by 10.
Or the VGRT Gaming Podcast, which is the merger between the two. And don't ask me which episode it is. I don't remember. Actually, I could do that actually easily. All I have to do is subtract 200 from 167. So this would be the 167th episode of VGRT Gaming. Wow, that's a long... The thing is that, you know, I entered the VGRT, I mean the TD Gaming Podcast, at episode 200. You know, which means...
Wow.
By this time next year, I'll have been on this podcast longer than the people who started the podcast, which is sort of weird. Anyways, this is, of course, Devin's first podcast with anybody. Well, not anybody. I mean, with this.
And what a lovely podcast. Surprise for our 200th episode. Yay, surprises.
Well, the thing is, it's a lot better mechanic when you have three people than just two people. Because, Paul, I was getting bored with you. Kidding.
No, I didn't want to be around you anymore either.
Said, well, I was getting bored with you too.
A little bitch.
I can just see the thing, Jonah and Paul, like an old married couple. Anyways.
Oh, thank God we got somebody else on this show. I was like a week away from killing you.
Anyways, so we recorded on Friday for the first time. I think this might be our recording day moving forward. That might change, but for now, it's fine. Especially also at the end of the week, you know, you get a lot more, you get the end of the week news so that you have a lot more analysis from people. So, this is going to be Devin's first time, because I'm going to have to do the bumper. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum. Or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. Again, welcome to the podcast, Devin.
Oh, thank you guys very much.
And we will see everybody next week.
Bye, Bonds. Alrighty.
Okay, you know, Devin's new, so you're going to have to figure out which one of you is going to speak first.
First Devin, then me.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Devin.
Wait, what are we what
just
are we
signing
doing
off.
Right
you're, say, you're saying, oh, you're saying, okay. You're saying
whatever, however you want to say
goodbye comment.
Yeah.
You're saying a farewell, a parting comment, if you will.
All right, I just wanted to thank you guys for having me on the show. Look forward to working with you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. I would like to point out that my design for this game would include equal amounts of male and female whores.